Blog Talk Radio.
Everyone, I'd like to welcome all of you to Ohio Exopolitics. I'm your host, Mark Snyder, and we are going to be talking about the Billy Meier case this evening on this Sunday, September 15th, 2013. I want to say hello to Eve at Tree of Enchantment, Mindful 624, and More Happy. Thanks for joining me tonight, guys. I'm going to actually do something a little unusual. I ran across a video of the August 13th Pony Complex fire, and it was one of these really large fires. I think it was in Idaho, maybe. Boy, I should have done a little more homework. Anyway, there's a YouTube video up there that just... let me throw this in the chat room because you guys might enjoy this. And there's some incredible blues music played in the background. I think the guitarist is named Tab Benoit. I never heard of him before. But I'll go ahead and play a little of this and let you guys listen for a few minutes. I just really liked it, and it shows these incredible columns of smoke and fire that, you know, lead right into the Hanok prophecies. So let's take a little listen here. Let me know if this doesn't come out.
And all the walls are crumbling. Shelter me, Lord, underneath your wings. Shelter me, Lord, underneath your wings. Hide me underneath your wings. Hide me deep inside your heart. In your refuge, cover me. The work is shaping, Lord, I'm making you my hiding place. Wind will blow, the rain can pour, the deluge breaks, the tempest roars. But in the storm,
bye.
You call for me. Someday when time, no.
Well, folks, I just had to share that with you. I know this is way off track from the Billy Meyer case, but check that video out. Listen to that music. I had to listen and watch it several times today. I'm going to just play a really long clip now. And this is, I mean, there's really nothing too much more I can add to this. This is an amazing, amazing story about how Billy's spiritual life all started. And I recommend this, and this is amazing. It's out on the Future of Mankind site. It's called How It All Began.
How It All Began, It All Began. Pleiadian Plagiarian Contact Reports, Volume 1, Introduction on the 3rd of February, 1941. When I had just turned 4, I lived in Niederflakes, 1253, a short distance from the town of Bielach Zh, which was surrounded by the Escher and Moser and Bruder Mountains, as well as by wide forests and extensive meadows and fields. Even then I felt the urge to learn a lot, and to become knowledgeable and wise, as well as modest, kind and worthy of life. Through their education of me, mother and father guided me in this direction. However, Pastor Rudolf Zimmermann, the minister of the Reformed Church of the municipality of Bielach, likewise played a weighty role, because, in him, quite especially, I saw the expression of knowledge and wisdom as well as the virtue of modesty, but also his kindness and appreciation in regard to human beings and life. These conditions were the constant motivation for me to contemplate all those values, and to develop myself in the direction, which also meant, for me, however, that, in spite of my young age, I had to learn a lot, and that I actually was not averse to learning. Nevertheless, I did not agree completely with all that which I had to learn, and the things which were explained and made known to me. Thus, from a very early age, I learned to maintain my own trains of thought in a controlled manner, to draw my own conclusions, and to make my own decisions. Through this, I also learned to separate the wheat from the chaff, and to look for the truth, where it is basically to be found, namely, in one's own inner and innermost, as well as in one's own intellect, in one's own reason, one's own thoughts, contemplations and feelings. From this, developed the recognition and application of self-responsibility, and the recognition and fulfillment of responsibility in regard to fellow human beings, the worlds of plants and animals, and in regard to life and the creational laws and recommendations. Thus I recognized very soon, and before I had even turned 5, that there was very much more to life than that with which human beings occupy themselves in everyday existence with work, which in those days, as a rule, also encroached on one's free time. Thus, according to my cognition, however, there was still very much more than only the instructive, educational moments and the usual learning, which a small earthling just learns, in everyday life, from peers, parents, grandparents, neighbors and so on. So I also recognized that, in spite of my young age, I was a human being like every other human being, only that I could not yet fit into the ranks of adults, because many years of growing up still separated me from them. Therefore, because of this and other things, I longed to grow up quickly, indeed, in matters pertaining to the consciousness just as much as in matters pertaining to the body and age. But it quickly became clear to me that I could not turn the wheel of time in order for it to run faster. Consequently, I therefore consciously had to practice patience, which also caused me no difficulties. Well, it happened during a mild night in May, in the year 1941, and, if I remember rightly, it was around 3 a.m., in the night of Sunday, May 4th. In any case, this is how it has all been etched into my memory, indeed, because everything which took place at that time was a special experience. I slept and dreamt that I saw my own body lying asleep in bed. Thinking about it in my sleep, I made the observation that I really was asleep, which somehow amazed me and moved me to wake up deliberately. A little drowsy, I looked out of the window, through which I saw the clear, starry sky. So I rose from my bed, went to the window and climbed out, as it was almost at ground level. Outside, I sat down on the simple bench, which stood against the wall of the house, and which Father had built. I could not see the moon, however, the sky was clear and wrapped in velvety black, and millions of stars shone down from the firmament. For a few minutes, I sat there like that and looked up to the stars, while pondering and, in my thoughts, flying far into the universe. However, suddenly something peculiar happened inside of me, which, from the next moment, irrevocably changed my whole life. Strangely touched, I looked at my hands and body and could only vaguely recognize them. So I touched my body and felt it, and then I heard my own voice say, "My life is made out of the love of creation." And I could not explain why I say that, and which power led me to speak these words. A slight shiver came over me, although the night was quite warm, and then I noticed that I also felt peculiar. Nevertheless, I was not frightened. Again, I looked up to the stars, and recognized that the stars were distant suns in the vast outer space, and that these shone by means of their own power, by themselves, even though they were created from the light of the love of creation, as is everything in the whole universe. And again, words the origins of which I could not decipher, the sense of which I was, however, able to grasp, as with the first words escaped from my lips, "Everything is created out of the light of love." And then further words followed, "The space between the stars is empty and yet not empty, and everything that exists in the whole universe is a living wesen one. Everything is creation and creation itself." The words, which came from my own mouth, penetrated deeply into me, and, in them, I recognized that the true source of life is the light of true creational love, which, in its vitality, creates all life and contains, within itself, all laws and recommendations of creational order and all information about life and death. I recognized that the light, which the stars emitted, was a light in the visible spectrum, however, the light of true love remained invisible, creational and for all great time too. And, indeed, the beaming stars were there, which stirred in me an unfamiliar longing for the vast distance and far away worlds. Then, words suddenly formed on my lips again, which said, "Since ancient times, you have lived among the stars," and suddenly I knew who I was, how I am and what my mission is on this earth. And, suddenly, impulses came from somewhere, which I later recognized as impulses from the storage banks, and many good memories penetrated me, and showed me the way I had to go in my life. Thus I also suddenly knew what space and time signify concerning the evolution of human beings and all things, and what the actual meaning of life is, in which the human being must create true love, peace, freedom, knowledge, harmony and wisdom. And the cognition was awakened that no life or other things at all could exist in the universe if the true being, the creation, did not direct everything with its love as well as its laws and recommendations. Thereby, as I recognized at that time, as a little boy, life becomes the power of creation, the highest might, which has created and maintains the universe and everything within it. This is everything of which I became aware during this night, as a little boy, who was just 4 years old. Everything which exists in the whole universe is a manifestation of the might and the infinite and true love of that mighty universal consciousness, which is simply called creation. And, together with the creation, everything that was created by this creation, everything existing in the whole universe, everything which crawls and flies. However, true love, as well as the true love of creation itself, of which I became aware, is a form of incomprehensibly radiating light, of the ZOHAR3, which permeates everything and allows all life and all existence to pulsate. Therefore, true love is light, which, in turn, perceives light and endlessly radiates further and never ends, but always keeps accumulating. And this love is also existent and recognizable in all matter, as well as in the human being, in whom it is present, as a result of the creational spirit, and which he just has to let grow in him, internally and externally, whereby true love again reflects true love and creates harmony. This true love is the reality, and not, however, all the illusions and unreal dreams which the human being procures, which he can never release, as they, exactly like smoke, only obscure his view and do not allow him to recognize what true love really is and what he himself is, in reality, within the universal drive mechanism of creation. The exterior, the body of the human being, is, namely, impermanent and transient. However, the true love of creational nature, which is anchored in his true inner being, in the spirit, is pure light of being and is imperishable. Already, at the age of 4, this great recognition instantly changed my life, because, after I was familiarized with this insight and understanding by means of the impulses from the storage banks, and also learn who I really was, what I had to learn and do in my life, and what my life task was, I looked at human beings, animals and nature, as well as all existing things, in a completely new way, and I suddenly felt a great astonishment within myself about that, which I now discovered. I suddenly saw myself in everything, in every fellow human being, in every flower or other plant, in every tree and shrub, in every animal, in snow, in water, in the earth, in the lightning and thunder, in clouds, in wind and in sunshine, because everything was, and is, connected in true, creational love, and forms a unity, which can never be separated. Even life and death are woven into it and are inseparably intertwined with each other. And exactly as a result of this connection, which was instantly clear to me, everything is mixed and connected in infinitely various ways, through which innumerable manifestations of life and existences were created, exist and will continue to be created. Within a few moments, I understood everything. I was excited with joy, and peace and harmony spread within me, but also the deepest deference and modesty, before the creational mightiness and infinite true love. Then, days and years later, I tried to explain, to my parents and neighbors, everything that had come about within me during that night, because I had a very great need to report, and to explain what cognitions I had gained. I could hardly wait to communicate this to my fellow human beings, but the opportunity to do this was not granted to me. There were simply no words for me to explain myself, and there were no human beings who understood what I, as a little boy, tried to explain to them. So I tried in vain to pass on my experiences and cognitions, but nobody grasped what I really meant. Parents, relatives, neighbors, teachers and other fellow human beings only saw how I changed more and more. However, they did not perceive that my eyes and my voice emitted something which was foreign to them. They only noticed that I became more and more modest, and that I did not condemn anything or anyone, and that I always gave what I could give. I became a human being who was no longer the same as the others, one who was still young in years and yet already old in his cognitions. I could understand fellow human beings very well and, even to old people, I could give good advice, for which they were very grateful. But nobody was in a position to understand me, except for Pastor Rudolf Zimmerman. Some thought I was a loner, others compared me to a sage, but nobody understood what actually went on inside me, what kind of thoughts and feelings I had, and what my real desire was to be able to intelligibly transmit my cognitions and knowledge to other human beings. My thoughts led me to the cognition that, essentially, every human being should see himself in his fellow human beings, as I saw myself in all other human beings, but nobody ever thinks to do this. Every human being lives only for himself and his own welfare, unless, out of some kind of feeling-based love or emotional love or perhaps really out of true love, he forms a connection with someone else. Thus it became clear to me that I had to assume the responsibility of my task and dedicate my life to it in order to give human beings understanding and to teach them that they dream up unreal things, and, indeed, without consciousness, and without comprehending what and who they really are, and to teach them, for which purpose they eke out their life here on earth. Thus the human being has to learn to know himself, and not to hide behind fog and smoke and not to believe that life can thereby be lived successfully and progressively. Hence, the saying shall be uttered, that it is very easy to go through life without perception and with closed eyes, and to disregard and misunderstand everything which, nevertheless, is seen out of the corner of one's eye. Only the human who life fulfills, who not in fog and smoke conceals, will happiness and victory one day obtain and the true love of human beings gain.
Well, folks, that is how it all began. A very, very long clip. I know that was probably too long. I hope you enjoyed it. I've listened to that four or five times over the past few days, and I just thought I would share that with you. I did a complete hour on the Billy Meyer case on Revolution Radio Saturday night, and we had about a four-hour roundtable today on Revolution Radio as well, and I'm going to try to post that on my Exopolitics Ohio website. And let me stick the Exopolitics Ohio website in the chat room again in case you haven't been there in a while. I've got all the Contact 31 MP3s up there in one spot there on the first page, so you can download those and listen to those, plus my recent shows on Revolution Radio. Let me recommend the discussion with Keith Hunter. That was a really interesting discussion. And also last night's discussion with Sophia Smallstorm. Looks like I have a caller. And we'll see what's on 972's mind tonight. 972.
Hey, it's me. I got some good news. I went and meet creation. Oh, man, Mark, I done it. I understand everything that the playing that Billy Meyer have experiencing during the hyperjump. Oh, it's crazy, Mark. It's beyond euphoria. It's the atom. It's the quantum computer. And now within it is a black hole. We call it the neutral positive. That's where the creation consciousness lives. Within it, once you enter the singularity, and I experience it, every point in the universe, throughout every universe, you can exit anywhere, at any time, past, present, and future. And it taught me that there's no such thing as time or space. Once you're in this singularity, everything is now. That means any point in the universe is now. That's how the Pleiadian use their hyperjump technology, you know? And I talked to it. So my training had reached a new stage now. Now you can ask me anything. I'm enlightenment now. Yes.
What do you mean the atom is the quantum computer? What does that mean?
Actually, it's a singularity. It looked like a cube. And inside it, where we call the neutral positive zone, the black hole itself, once you go in, once your conscious link with it, and when you go in there, when you enter that one atom, you experience every atom at different state of either a wave or a particle at the same time. And every point in the universe, past, present, and future, that means you can exit and go anywhere from that neutral positive state, that which is a singularity, which is a black hole. And now I understand exactly what the sisters is talking about, what they were trying to describe. I understand what Billy Meyer is saying, that euphoria feeling. It's just like you, everything at once, at the same time. It's like I'm you, I'm me, I'm the radio, I'm the plant. I'm every atom in the universe at the same time, and that state of singularity, that when in the neutral positive.
You said the atom looks like a cube. Why does the mainstream describe it as spheres that are rotating around each other?
That is just the field that is spinning, but its physical metric solid state form is a cube, and within it is another cube. It's like there's 72 cubes in it connecting. When you look at one cube, you see 72, and then there's 144 cubes in all. But inside each cube, there is a singularity, a black hole. But inside the main cube, it's also a singularity, a black hole at the same time. From retrospect, from 3D perception, it exactly looked like the cube. Cube within cube within cube, 72 different times. And it looked like a cube within cube on the macro level. So you can count each cube. There's actually 72 cubes in all inside each atom.
Now, you're saying 72 cubes with a black hole in each cube?
Exactly. Exactly. And the field that you see it rotating, though it's just the field, you know, it's like it from the middle of it, it ejects out some kind of energy from horizontally, and then it splits into two fields, and it go back in the north and the south again, and then it keep doing the same thing. And that singularity where it enters, that's where the neutral positive state. The bottom A took me to see what it truly looked like, and I finally understand all there is to understand. There is no more what we call wrong and right in that stage. Everybody's reflection of everybody. And that's the human way that I can put into that perspective. See, right now I can see aura to the fullest. I see everything has an energy field. I can see aura now.
Can you explain your technique for meditation to us?
Yes. The simple way, you can take anything, tree branch, a bowl, a soup bowl, or even a coconut shell, and just flip it over on the pillow and put it between your palm, but don't let your palm touching it, you know? And it's on a pillow, and the pillow is on your lap. And then you're laying back to the wall, and then you just let your palm face the object. You know, the object is between.
Why do we need an object? Why can't we just meditate?
Because the atom. You need an atom to fill the atom, because the air atom is one thing, but you need a concurrency atom, which is an object atom. You need concurrency.
See when I meditate, I meditate more for purposes of relaxation and rejuvenation, but it sounds like when you meditate, you're trying to gain knowledge.
Yes, you're trying to link to the neutral positive state of creation, which Billy Meyer, the Dim, was describing. And the Buddha called this neutral positive state nirvana. Nirvana meaning zero, a zero point, a nothing. Well, that's what that's what neutral positive state is. It's nothing. But in scientifically, what Bader Meinhof had taught me is a black hole. You're trying to connect to the black hole within the atom itself, which is a 72 of them in all, and then 144 face. And then each atom is how the universe looks, and also the weight of the universe can be calculated. And it told me how big the universe, how expanding, contracting that rate is, and how each atom is connected to all the other atom in other universe. And
are you saying that each atom
yes.
is essentially a kind of a fractal copy of the universe?
Oh, more than that. It's atomic computers that have consciousness, and that consciousness exists in that singularity or the black hole inside it.
So and are you saying each atom is conscious?
Yes, it's very conscious because it has intelligence. And once one atom know one thing, the rest know it also, because in it is a thing. It's all linked to a black hole inside. That black hole share the same entry point, exit point throughout the whole entire atomic structure. That means every atom share the same black hole. That's the only way I can describe it.
So what do you think is at the center of our galaxy then?
It's a black hole.
And a link to the intelligence of creation?
That's the macro link to it. But if you link to the atom in front of you, whether it be in the tree or the dish plate, you're also linking to the atom in the macro atom that is in the center of our galaxy. Except that no black hole are conscious. They are alive. They are very intelligent, and they talk. They basically are neutral positive intelligent. About a million intelligent. Now I understand it. I've been going on the right path, but I just didn't have the 3D mind enough experience to understand. But now I do. Now I can see aura now vividly. It explained to me there are the energy field that help us to understand how energy field in relationship with other energy field, and when the atom comes together, it have a purpose, have an intent. And once you understand that purpose and intent, then it told me, then you understand the purpose of each physical creation. It serves a wisdom purpose. That's what it said, that heaven has ordered it. And I say, so you basically are computers. They say consciousness, singularity, computers. That's what it told me to be called. A QCSC. So each atom is a QCSCN, Quantum Consciousness Singularity Computer Network. So the atom is the computer, so you don't need to create the computer. It already exists in nature.
Well, that's pretty abstract, Kosal.
Yeah.
You always have some interesting things to say when you call in. Are you still using the berame that's made up of hair and seashells and all that?
No, I'm going beyond that now. Because the seashell, the hair and everything, you know, it's complicated. It's an engineered version. Then Bader Meinhof taught me the atom is the Bader Meinhof. So since everything is made of Bader Meinhof, we just choose an object, you know, that have concurrency. The shape, the plate.
Berame means life force, right?
Well, that doesn't mean life force, but it also has other detailed meaning. It actually, bottom line, meaning higher wisdom, higher intelligence, higher consciousness that sustain and create and generate and also destroy and rearrange creation at the same time, in all time and all space.
And that's what the exact definition of Baudemay is. If you want to harness this this creational energy, you basically become creational energy. You are who your teacher is. You are who you entertain. So I entertain Baudemay. So every day I'm becoming more like Baudemay. And that means I'm becoming pretty much like creation, neutral,
now,
positive.
Kosal, haven't you written some books?
Yes, I did. You can go to Amazon.com and put my name, Kosal Ouch, K-O-S-O-L, last name, O-U-C-H. But some of my books are dangerous, though, because I teach people how to build anti-gravity device, portal generator, device that control weather, and basically that made the heart look like child play. I built technology, and also I built people how to use what we call the copper Baudemay device, which is a very dangerous piece of technology that can be constructed, and it helped people to connect to the atom in a very intense way. And that's why I didn't pursue it. I give that to James Rink because his mind can handle it. All the Caucasian people can handle that technology. But those who have a sensitive heart, we couldn't handle it because that thing talks so much. It's like a Baudemay on steroids. It was just too powerful for ordinary people. I mean, when I say ordinary people, people who are sensitive like me and stuff.
I don't think I can handle Baudemay myself. I just have to stick with a regular meditation. Have you thought of writing a book about these experiences that you're having?
I wrote books. I wrote 9 books in Amazon. I put it all in Amazon, other bookstores, all online. But writing my experience, that's going to be my number 10 book. I'm going to probably going to write a new book later, but I need one thing first. People don't know nothing about me. I'm just a new kid on the block, and some people may heard of me, but they don't know nothing about me. So for me coming on the show, being in relationship with the show and with the people, so people are going to have an acclimation of what is my research, what is my journey is all about. Basically, I share the same passion like Billy Meyer, like Sheldon Neidel. But also, these two people have different view of things because they have different teachers. But however, their meaning is the same, basically, to connect to creation, from what I understand. Sheldon Neidel say a whole lot of stuff different from Billy Meyer, but their messages is similar, you know?
Right. I think, if you could take some of your work and somehow channel it into something that's tangible. In other words, if some people could, produce something that people could verify. You know what I mean?
It can be verified. It's easy. Just take a plate, okay? The plate member, the one that's showing my picture. Take a little, foil. You get a what's it called? There's two types. You can buy one of them interference cameras from Dr. Ophiel. You can see the energies coming out. And you also hook an oscilloscope, just one wire, to a foil. You know, a foil cutter big as your, maybe back big as your palm. And then
energy, though? That's coming from your own mind, right?
Well, the atom is energy. And it has singularity. The atom has all the energy you need. And all we just want to command it. It responds to consciousness and a audio command. You know, you don't need to create a zero-point generator. This is how the atom is already there. You don't need to recreate nanotechnology. The atom is the nanotechnology. I understand it now. It's just the whole problem was we didn't know how to connect to it. Now I know the secret, and the secret is the Baudemay method. And then just like you and I talking, you talk to it, and it responds, and it reacts. So quantum physics people are verifying the stuff I'm saying a lot, more and more. But it's just that they don't see it like the atom is a living computer, a sentient consciousness computer. All of them have different personality, but they share the same heart.
I don't want to take us too far off the Billy Meyer case, and I actually didn't have all that much prepared for this evening because I've been so involved with Revolution Radio. But why don't we have a little fun?
Uh-huh.
And we'll let's go back And let's, I'm interested to find out, you know, what Barame has to say about my background and where I lived before I came to the earth. Okay, we want to try that again?
Okay. Yes, Barame, give me a whole 9 yards of Mark Snyder. Barame for acknowledge, displaying all his past life now.
Well, let me ask questions so Barame can answer some questions. I'll try to come up with specific questions. What was my, you've told us before that I, in my previous life, I lived on Sirius, on some planet near the Sirius star system. What was my home like? Tell us what my home was like.
Okay. Bottom A is showing. You pretty much belong to a potlet. And I'm seeing right now, I'm observing things from perspective of Bottom A. You have 63 family members live in your potlet. And they all have many, many skills and character in life science and developing life technology and healing technology. Your father, his name is, it's a little weird name, but bear with me. The bottom A is translating Assyrian to English, basically. Amit D. It means the message. That's, he's about like 720 year old. This is why you, when you were incarnate there. This is your father, and you at that time 268 years. And now he's sending you down. He's going to be telling you that in your future life, you'll be coming to Earth for a very special part that you have to play, that you will be called upon to play. And your specialty, you built ship and also write programming for living AI. You pretty much built an artificial intelligent device. And you are very crafty in engineering and creating and rewriting program for a different type of medical device and also gadgetry like probe and stuff that go out to different planets and gather the life energy, the health of each planet and then the sun. So your clan is pretty much technology to monitor the life force of the tree, the plant, and build technology to heal each of them. I met your father, 720 years old, is telling you, he's showing you through some kind of device. It looked like a spherical network. And then there's a floor is coming up with a chair. I mean, not like a regular chair like we have. It's like a comfortable chair. And it's like you appear to be floating, walking on some kind of holographic floor. Very interesting. It seemed to... It's like your feet is not even touching the ground. And the wall is very luminous and has also changed color when you get around it. And it's showing you your future life through this living computer system. And he say that you'd be taking on the name that you have now. You'd be working with computer and you'd be going into this particular family. And at first you would not be into spiritual. And he'll show you, you'll be into all science and you'll be craving mathematics. You'll be talking in this language. And he's showing you this event that happened in your life that your heart opened. And then you become more spiritual. You begin to look dolphin. You begin to look at among the stars. It's like you didn't have this memory yet until this happened. All of a sudden, this experience will be familiar to you. And all of a sudden, you begin to develop a passion to it. And then you begin to spread the message of connectiveness and help basically create a raising consciousness, a raising technological development in that planet called Earth. And he explaining that then there will be people from Syria that be coming on ship and they will come and meet you and basically be him, your father, be coming and meet you and your uncle.
How long did I live in my previous life?
483 years old.
And what did I look like in that lifetime?
you have a very reddish blue white skin. It's kind of weird. It's like, remember the picture from the Rama India Mahabharata where the god looked bluish? Your skin color look very bluish, you know?
Huh.
But sometimes it changes red depending on your mood. Your eye is very green.
Wow, why did I come to the earth?
Your father, Amit Lee, telling you some more right there, just the purpose, because the spiritual of this, the planet Earth, had requests that people from different star systems, Sateria, from different 50-plus star nations, Pleiadia, Syria, Andromeda, Hagar 1, Hagar 2, Seta 1, Seta 2, all the different human star systems that a colonized planet Earth, asked them to send volunteers to basically to prepare Earth to give birth to a new Earth planet and a new Earth civilization that be equal and will serve all the other star systems. So it's like a unfolding creation. And your father, Ahmed B, is explaining to you that will you be able to assist that the human family and that particular culture. And he will tell you that once you reach 480 years, that you will cease to exist. You no longer have predestiny with Celia B. And then you will not die. You will be transformed into a light being, and that you will be incarnated into a predestined chosen family and to carry out this particular service for planet Earth. And that's what it says.
And will I reincarnate on Earth again?
They say, no, you will return, not in the future life, you will return as an extraterrestrial to Earth.
Oh, and what was the name of the planet that I was living on in the Sirius system?
You live in Sirius B, you live on the third planet. Sirius B is colonized by three planets, three water worlds, and therefore you live on a third planet, and you live not on the surface, but inside a city looked like crystal, 400 miles inside the planet. And the planet is from the Syrian tongue, is called Sasia. Sasia. It means life giver.
And what did that planet look like from space?
It has two moons. There is no cloud in its atmosphere. It has an ice shield. Two of them look like made of ice that is 3,000 feet thick, two layer open, and they call this the sky shield. And in the bottom, they tell me in English, is the name of it. We call basically an ice shield, a firmament.
Do the people live below the ice?
No. The ice shield position that about may give me the actually is at 15,000 to 18,000 feet. The other one is at 35,000 to 38,000 feet in the atmosphere.
There's an ice shield in the atmosphere on this planet?
Yes. There's two layers. And each layer is 3,000 feet thick.
Is it like the firmament that was on Earth at one time?
Bottom A? They say exactly like the firmament on Earth at one time.
And does this ice shield protect people from harsh cosmic rays and things like that?
Bottom A say it to maintain the eco atmosphere to create all the planet to be maintained a 75 degree to 80 degree Fahrenheit. That means to tropical conditions, so it will be fairness for the life. The life force to come abundantly, so cosmic radiation won't destroy cellular information that cellular life force that the plant and animal and the human being need. So it create what we call a harmonious environmental factor that with no rain, no cloud, just only mist in the morning that will water the plant.
So if people were to see this planet from space, it would look like an ice planet, correct?
It would look as a bluish-red color. The firmament act like an telescope at night. You can see the star really close.
You can see through the firmament?
Yes. It worked like a lens of glass, like a telescope, Bottom is showing me. And especially when it adjusts itself, it floats. And there is pyramid temple all around the node point that I'm seeing. It's showing me. And it looked like, how it had limestone aglow? When the sun hit it, it started to glow. It had the same effect. And it's beaming some kind of like a helix type of energy that is holding up the firmament.
I just thought of a practical application for your Barame.
Yes.
Why wouldn't you write all of this information down? Just write it down and put it in a book as science fiction and call it whatever the name of this planet is in the Sirius system. I mean, it's so interesting what you're describing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you said that there was some kind of event that opened up my heart on this other world, right?
Yes. After your death, according to Bottom A, Amadi, begin to show your future life, you will move. Because to Assyrian, there's no such thing as death. There's only service to the higher, to maintain higher physical creation for the universe. So for you, it felt like it was an honor. You just saw your destiny for future life, and you embraced it. You say, this is where you need to go to uplift the people of that particular planet so they can have what we call a fairness future and a fairness active part in creational guardianship. Bottom A is showing me more, and your sister is arriving. She is touching you. I don't know what you guys are doing, but I can see the energy exchange.
Huh. Well, Kusala, it's been another interesting bit of information you shared with us. I appreciate that. And like I say, I recommend you write this down. You could probably publish it even as science fiction. I mean, it's just absolutely fascinating stuff. I got another caller here, Kusala. Thanks so much. 928, I think this is Larry. Larry, welcome to the show. How are you this evening?
Hi, Mark. Fine. And thanks for that little return email regarding what I sent to you. And regarding Kusala, and the Billy Meyer case that you represent, I think that you might take a step aside and address Billy Meyer and Figu Switzerland in regard to Kusala's statements. Okay? It's easy for a person to call in on a show and make all kinds of statements. They can be proclamations and everything. I'm not antagonistic, Kusala. I don't know if he's right or wrong. But your show is anchored to the Billy Meyer case. And many, many times over the history of the case, as you well know, many claims have been made for knowledge regarding the Billy Meyer case. And I really think that you should, if you have a recording of Kusala's statements, you should move them off to Switzerland for the report.
Okay, and maybe I'll take your advice on that. You're going to send me some information on contact report 35, correct?
Yeah. I sent it on Thursday. It was not a very good day for me because I learned that my tooth is in really bad shape and from the radiation treatment, and I'm recovering sort of from that. But I said, geez, I got to get this off the mark because that can be one positive thing that I do on Thursday. But I was hoping that maybe it would arrive to you before obviously your show, thinking that you might do another excerpt on the 35th.
I may do that, in fact, as soon as I get it. There's, it's interesting in the book, And Still They Fly, the Guido Musburger book, he has a little section in there on Contact Report 35 That's in addition to what is published at the Future Mankind site. So there's,
right.
I think, a lot of interesting information in that Contact 35, particularly about the Giza intelligences.
Right. You'll get that Wendell's book, and I don't think Wendell will get angry at me since he's in the beyond right now for giving you this. But when I went to the Future of Mankind site, I saw that they only had the information about Eckhart. And
right.
So since you were there on the 35th, and as you're moving forward, which is a great energy from your side to come through the contact notes, and you're at 35, I wanted to sort of get it to you as best as possible as I could so that you knew that there was something more in there. It'll eventually get into the Future of Mankind site. There's no doubt about it. But,
Wendell,
think so? It's just that I'm not – what I sent a translation of my own off to James, and he said he'd put it in there, but it, I don't know, for whatever reason, it didn't get in there. So anyway but the point is, I want to take a step aside, and I hope everybody is listening at this time, to compliment you on your show. Because, you see, Mark, I was really worried after my study. You know I've studied the case since 1980 and up to 1997. I just learned, like most people, but in 1997 I decided to reach out. You are reaching out with your program, but it's in a better technology form. You talk, and not only do you attend to the contact notes, 31, 7, whatever you want to call it, but you then address the connection to the present, like the burning fires in the western United States that you addressed in a few previous shows.
Those are incredible, Larry. I mean, the more research I do on that, it's just astonishing. It's like we're seeing those Henoch props just literally come to life.
Well, that's the good part about your effort. You see, you're bringing it to the level of a Blog Talk Radio, whereas others of us, we just read about it in the book. There's nothing wrong with either source, the fact that you do this, and there's also been stories that were the fires in America set by terrorists? Well, it really doesn't matter whether they were set by lightning or terrorists. It sort of feeds in to what you've been reviewing in the contact notes, okay? So what you're doing is you're bringing a source from the past, from 75 to the present, and the reason what I like about your show, and you'll step through all the contact notes, is that I always had this fear as learning over time that the contact notes would drift into past and never be celebrated and never be revived and presented to the Earth public. What you're doing is just that. You're allowing that all the people who listen to your show have the book in front of them, and you present a travel from the past. You're at the 35th, and by the way, I'm in the process of translating the 566th contact of June 23rd, 2013.
Why don't you tell us a little bit about that, Larry? That's a very recent contact, correct?
I'm glad you stopped me there for a second, we're talking on the same plane here. You understand that I've always, when I've contacted, I anchor the Billy Meyer case back to the January 28, 1975 first contact, and it continues forward to the present, as Billy Meyer has had the the 566th contact of June 23rd, 2013. Just what you asked me. Now, Mark, June 23rd, 2013, what, we were at July, August, September? That's like 3 months ago.
Well let me ask you, was this a physical contact or just a telepathic contact?
No, it's, as you well know, is basic contactor.
after the 95 release of the basis. They want to, Ptah is the god of their planet, their Ishwish, and they understand Billy's depths of character, and Ptah will be continuing to contact him. This particular case, the excerpt from it, was just a kind of negative description of the United States' involvement in world affairs.
Right.
But I guess it doesn't matter. You see, it could be Russian. You know, I get a little upset with the figure position about the United States being this bad enemy all the time. But that's fine. Okay, we'll step back. And who else do you want? Do you want China to come out there and be the world's policeman? Do you want Russia to come out there? It's very easy to criticize the person who's trying to do something. And believe me, the United States is not innocent, and Billy has got it described quite well. But I have a friend who's the husband of my realtor. He says, you know, Larry, you told me that the United States government was very bad, but that only means that the rest of the world's governments are only worse.
Mm-hmm.
And that's pretty much the case. We're not going to have high-quality individuals in these positions. Politics does not attract truth and truth-seekers.
No, it doesn't.
So you're not going but we're struggling to get through here. I guess you could say that the agreement with Syria and this thing, they can point fingers at everybody, but we don't have a third world war either, okay? So,
not yet.
Any time we can keep pushing that off for more dialogue and whatever, who cares what one points the finger at? But I guess, and you know, I was really wild excited when you sent me that email about the success of your other show there. Where you
said, Revolution Radio
is
really
right.
Picked a big, big audience. It's amazing. I did a show last night. Just on the Meyer case, it's kind of tough to fly solo. I got to completely fly solo there because I can't get any of my clips to come out right on Revolution Radio, and it's just kind of it's a challenge. But I did do a whole hour, and I kind of just did a big overview, and then I had another guest the second hour. So it's kind of cool, you know. We're doing what we can.
Well, that's good. Mark, the key is that you're getting it out, and I was so happy to see the success of your program, and especially because on this show, your show right now, you work some contact notes in there. Then as a neutral, positive mentator or whatever you want to call yourself, you address all kinds of options. You look around to the present conditions. What can we find? You just move all this information into the public format, Blog Talk Radio, and let everyone think. This is really good in the sense that it's a little bit more than just picking up a book and reading it for your personal sense. You're kind of like galvanizing all listeners.
Have you read that little... There's a section on the future of mankind side. I played this really long clip tonight, how it all began, Billy's experience when he was like 3 or 4 years old, and he's in Niter Flux, which is near Balak, and he wakes up at 3 a.m., and he goes outside, and he sits down on the little bench there that his father made by his house, and he looks up at that beautiful starry sky, and he hears the voice which says something to the effect that he's the product of the love of creation, and then in a little while he hears another voice that says, in ancient times you lived among the stars. It's just this beautiful, beautiful writing that allows you to look into the mind of this young boy as he's trying to put all of this together and trying to understand his purpose in life and try to recall his previous lives. And I've been real attracted to that relationship between young Billy and Svaf and how he must have felt as a young child with all this incredible information flowing into his
head. Yeah, that's a good point, Mark. And not just only that, your positive statements and descriptive statements, just ask every one of your listeners, how would you like to be a 4-year-old or a 5-year-old boy? Having those thoughts and inputs come impending into your thoughts. How think back on all of our lifetimes. How were we at 4 or 5? So there's not as much information about the relationship of sloth to Billy other than what we learn about it. But I guess I just wanted to contribute a little bit from my side, because my side has been to rather than Blog Talk Radio, I don't have that. I've been trying to assess the power authorities on planet, trying to get them to attend to Billy's information on certain levels.
And, of course, they won't.
They won't, but on my last level, I was down to the – I think I might have made a statement that Isaac Newton made a statement once in the past. Give me a leveler arm long enough and a chance to place the fulcrum, and I can move the world.
Mm-hmm.
It really means that a small force can move a large object given the chance to place the fulcrum. Now, let's consider that the large object would be the mentality, the earth conduct of all human beings on our planet. Let's consider that the long lever arm would be the Billy Meyer contact notes and all the truth and all the efforts, the Talmud of Emmanuel, extending back from under the planet Earth, Earth human conducts. The small force can be considered Larry Driscoll, Mark Snyder, Jim Deardorff pushing down. It's truly a small force.
Yes.
What is the fulcrum? What is the fulcrum? And I sent an attachment off to you, an email off to you. The fulcrum is reincarnation. If you place that close enough to the earth and you push down, why do I say that? Because most people on this planet think that they will be getting away and dying away from the problems of Earth conduct on our planet.
Well,
they think and care about
their
children.
You know how else, Larry, the way I think of reincarnation is a little different, because to me, it's hope. You know, you get another chance. You get another shot, you know, to be better, to learn things.
That's good.
I mean,
Mark, you're exactly right. It's just that in the mentality of the human, he has been told by his religions that there is no reincarnation. This is why I sent through my 35 submittals to the 8 to the overpopulation, 27 to the climate people, that this was stated back in 30 to 35 A.D., by Emmanuel. This is not something that Billy Meyer conjured up in his scribing his fictions in 1975. This is in existence, and it was taken away from human beings' awareness. Just like in the Talmud, which Jim defines as occurring, written down at least by 100 AD, the two chapters, Mark, on creation and creation in humans. Totally obliterated, taken away. The whole concept of creation was removed from human awareness in 120 AD by the writer of Matthew. There is nothing in the book of Matthew, Gospel of Matthew, stating the word creation. Whereas in the Talmud of Matthew, Talmud of Emmanuel, that's what his source was. He eliminated that. So all information about creation, and
you
use that term.
Don't you think the concept of creation is a beautiful, beautiful concept? Because when we think of what the creation is, there's this great – Billy has this writing. I need to look it up. It's about love, and it's about the creation. And he says this one thing that stuck in my mind more than anything. He said that the incredible splendor of nature is nothing more than the visible expression of the love of creation. So we get to see that love expressed visibly. We have that wonderful opportunity But somehow, over thousands of years, our senses have become dull, and we don't respond to that anymore. We don't see that.
You're good in that. But also, I want you to say, Lair's kind of anchored into physical reality, okay? And first of all, the reason I mentioned those two chapters on creation and creation in humans were in existence, and it was taken away. People could have been reading for 1,900 years those two chapters to understand, and they would have the fixation and the image of creation as written by Emmanuel. Now, sure, there's more effort and more definition in the contact notes, but I can't refer to the contact notes because my goal is to establish to the human mentality that this was taken away from their awareness at this early age. But a second point, I want to tell you something about I sense sometimes the over, almost maudlin and reference to creation. Creation sends animals to kill one another. Do you know that, Mark? They kill one another for their existence. So when you're talking about love, you better be talking about animals killing one another, because that's a part of creation too.
Absolutely. So are volcanoes and tremendous storms.
Yeah, right.
Yeah,
everything is a part. Right. So
there's different aspects of it. It's not.
Right. But we.
Creation is not humane.
It's not a human. You're right. And it creates. And we know. I've sent you some things about that. How it's a double spiral arm in the middle of the center of our universe, creating and doubling upon each expansion. That's the best thing I found in the contact notes in the 69th contact that described it as a physical reality.
But you know, Larry, the beauty of it is it all comes back to love again, because even that poor deer that it gets eaten by the lion, it reincarnates again as a baby fawn and starts all over again.
Right. There's method to the madness. I'm not doubting creation and its forming. Obviously, I'm a part of it. But I'm sort of forwarding this on, because once when I expressed this to T. Roy Dutton in Great Britain, and when I started saying some things about creation, he says, I see creation as just nothing but violence. I see galaxies crashing into one another and destroying one another. There's always method to that, and it's just that right now, like the caller that came before me, he might, I don't know if he's speaking truth or not truth, but I think he's too much removed from your central subject matter of the Billy Meyer information. I really think that it has to anchor back to him. Billy's trudging through life and the connection to that, because we can all make these statements. And I've told you before that when I make a statement to you, I say, Mark, I'm anchoring my statement back to the such and such contact. I could say I disagree with this contact, or I agree with it, or whatever. But I don't like to make statements like, this is Larry Driscoll's opinion. No.
Have you had a chance to head back to Munn's Park at all yet?
No, I got a notification about from Christian about, and by the way, I did attend to Christian regarding if Billy could put some numerical definition over population reduction. But no, I haven't had a chance to go over there because it's such a stress financially for me to move from my house for gas mileage, and now. What I learned from the oral surgeon and the doctor, I'm going to have to value that in terms of that. But someday in the future, as you saw with my little drawings, something will happen in Arizona. But
do you think someday there might be a? Is there a FIGU in U.S. right now?
There might be a center. The point is that you just can't, Mark Snyder cannot pick up everything and just move out to Arizona. The people in California just can't pick up everything and move out to Arizona. This is what I was trying to tell them at the Toward the Truth meeting. I said, in the end, it has to have physical reality based on economical conditions. You know, that's what's driving people's decisions.
There's not really a FIGU U.S. yet. Sure.
No, there wasn't, and they only need two people, and Michael Horn is probably the center that could be essentially be it. But I have my thoughts. Someday we'll talk in private on the thoughts
sure.
about FIGU. I think they have the wrong attitude in trying to force Americans to adapt to the FIGU way. There's no better supporter than Michael Horn for Billy's
mm-hmm.
ways. He's an American. There's no greater supporter than Mark Snyder, and myself excluded. But they force the FIGU way on Americans, and I just think they're making a fundamental mistake. A good manager, when he looks at his employees, he looks at their talent, and he sees how their talents can support his business, himself, and even the improvement of that individual person. But to dictate the terms of how Americans will act from Switzerland is a fundamental problem that I think Switzerland has. They don't trust Americans to be able to accomplish a goal in an American way. There's nobody, like I say, yourself, myself, we've all studied Billy Meyer for all these years. We are not the enemy, okay? But you have to let us do our thing. And apparently they don't like that. They have to say you have to fit square A into square B, and that's probably why it's not been successful over here.
Hmm. You know, there is a FIGU Australia and a FIGU Canada.
Right. Well, they're fine in adapting to the strategies. But remember, and this is what I was telling you in translating this recent contact here. It's easy to criticize the United States. It's easy to say there are all these bad things. And so I figure, like, say, screw you all across the entire world. And actually, this would be positive in terms of the Billy's fate. Draw your safe. I don't care if North Koreans and South Koreans kill one another. I don't care if Syrians gas one another. Well, when we don't care, well, where's that UN stepping up to the plate? There's nobody coming. They say, let America take care of it. Well, screw you all. I don't care. You kill one another. You kill North Sarah. I don't care. That's your problem. And what we have to do is keep people from coming to this country because everybody is wanting to come to America to be saved. That's why we have immigration problems and everything. No, screw it. We'll take care of ourselves. You do it. It's your problem. You take care of it. But like they called me in college, they called me ATSP, the all-time shitty person. they knew me at first as ASD, All Sports Driscoll, because I was kind of talented in sports, mm-hmm. baseball, and football, and basketball. But when they came to know me, I say it like it is. I tell them. And they started calling me Bitter Lair and all-time shitty person. But yet 25 years after we graduated, I got a call from the closest friend within the organization. He said, you know, Larry, he said, yeah, you know, Driscoll, we gave you a hard time back in college, but the more I think about it, you were the only sane one among us.
Mm.
It's just that I was making statements that they didn't realize were anchoring to physical reality. And this is, again, when I make statements to you, I'll anchor them back to the contact notes. I will keep my opinion away from it. And that's why I like to see your show always focus constantly back to the Meyer material.
I
have to attend.
I think you make a good point there, Larry. Very good point. I'm going to definitely give that some contemplation. And thanks so much for sending me that information on Contact Report 35. I appreciate that.
Give me an update how you think about it, because you'll see the part about ACARD in there.
Yeah.
You've gotten from the future man, but there's just so much more there. And eventually, I think what happened at the Future of Mankind, they selected beyond Wendell's books for starting point, other than the first few contacts. They wanted to get to others. They knew that Wendell had his books there, and they were accessible. So, but when you started getting to 35th, I realized that you were probably looking at the Future of Mankind website, looking at the blue numbers, saying, "Wow, these are the only ones in English." So I just wanted when you mentioned the 35th, and then I read at the Future of Mankind the 35th what they had. I said, "Well, let's just get this off the mark," because for your benefit, and if you want to talk about it on the show, that's all.
Well, Larry, I appreciate that. Thanks so much for calling in, folks. We're going to listen to a little gentle music, and then I'll be back on with more of the Billy Meyer case. You're listening to Ohio Exopolitics. I'm your host, Mark Snyder. We'll be right back in a couple of minutes. Welcome everyone back to Ohio Exopolitics Radio. I'm your host, Mark Snyder. We've been all over the map a little bit tonight, but typically on these Sunday evenings, we talk about the Billy Meyer case, and we've had Kosal call in and Larry Driscoll from Arizona. I want to talk a little bit about the Planet Era this evening. Most people in the UFO community call these extraterrestrials the Pleiadians. They're actually the Pleiaren. They're about 80 light years beyond our Pleiades in a different space-time configuration. And Era is the home world of all of these extraterrestrials. There are many of them: Ptah, Quetzal, Semyase, Thoth. They are members of the Pleiaren Federation. There are no smokestacks on Era. There are no roads. People travel around in these things that are kind of like shuttlecraft. They live in perfect harmony with their environment because they all have this deep connection with the creation. They understand the importance of keeping the creation in its pristine form. They don't really have air pollution or water pollution. They don't have a monetary society. They have robot-assisted manufacturing. They have what they call a borrowed asset scheme, where I don't think you really own anything. You just kind of use it. They have no poverty. All poverty is eradicated. All food, energy, and housing is free. They have both monogamy and polygamy. They have one man to many women, but for whatever reason, not the other way around. They say subsequent reincarnation as the opposite sex makes this equal. They also have no homosexuality on Era or bisexuality. They call this a benign genetic disorder that is easily eradicated through genetic manipulation. And they say there are virtually never any incompatible couples because of the use of advanced astrology and other social sciences. So maybe one day, you know, the Earth can be like Era. That would be a great dream. Now, we've talked about the Atlantis and Lemuria timeline before and how these extraterrestrials came to the Earth about 133,000 years ago, according to Contact Report 70, a man named Atlat came to the Earth from the Barnard Star. He had his wife with him, Kerayshide, and they picked out an island continent that I think was somewhere between South America and Africa, near the equator, with had a good climate for living, and it wasn't long until the beautiful skyline of the Atlanteans were seen. And also King Miras came, and he settled in what would now be the Gobi Desert and built the kingdom of Lemuria. The Lemurians also had an underground city, two underground cities that were connected by a tunnel system. And these peoples, they lived in peace for something like 1,800 years in this incredible peace. Eventually, an Ishwish named Eris, who came from Beta Centauri, came to Earth, and he brought with him 200 leaders and sub-leaders. And one of these sub-leaders was named Semyasa, which is quite interesting. Semyasa broke one of the rules that these extraterrestrials had in that he mated with an Earth woman. And eventually, the offspring was called Adam, which means Earthman. Now, the OM has a reference to this. I want to read the little section here from the OM. It's kind of related to this. And the Yahweh, or the Ishwish, and his helpers live at a place unknown to earth, from which where he watches over the earth and the generations of men, and from where he or his watchers also appear in the singing lights floating high through the air. And also coming from that place, the Ishwish appeareth alone, floating through the air, or with his armies, and also in the full power of his might, and covering the sky with radiating ships of light, which are without sail, but fly through the air singing. Now, can you imagine this sight to ancient man when they see this? And as man today is fearful thereof, as also about that which I have seen and heard, so will the people of the coming distant time will also be anxious and fearful. And verily, all will be fearful in the distant time, and also the watchers will tremble, and the new Ishwish of the coming time, for much disaster will fall upon the earth, caused by the earthman. So these extraterrestrials, when they came to the earth, let me read this other section here. Therefore, they all swore and obliged themselves among each other, and forthwith they departed secretly at a number of 200 and flew with one singing light to the peak of a mountain. Now, I think this is the time that we're talking about here where Semyasa, one of the sub-leaders of Eris, comes to the earth, and they decide with a bunch of these other people from Beta Centauri that they're going to mate with the earth women. Therefore, they all swore and obligated themselves among each other, and forthwith they departed secretly at a number of 200 and flew with one singing light to the peak of a mountain. And as they landed on the peak of the mountain, they swore a second time the oath of the dark covenant, and they also called the mountain of the oath in their language ARDJS, which means oath mountain. And then, I'll skip ahead a little bit here, and among the 200, the highest of the sub-leaders was Semyasa. And then they list out the other sub-leaders. Therefore, the daughters and the sons of the heavens took for themselves husbands and wives from the mankind of earth. And the daughters selected a husband for themselves, and every son selected a wife for himself. And they began to go into them in undisciplined mixing. And the sons and the daughters of the heavens taught they're unjustly taken human beings of earth and all types of handicrafts. They talked about teaching them how to cut roots and do other things. By that time, when the women of the human beings of earth became pregnant from the sons of the heavens and also impregnated the daughters of the heavens by the mankind of earth, but it happened. Now, this is very interesting. This is what we're getting to here. This happened at the time of Atlantis. This was truly a mess. I don't know how this plays in to this great war that occurred. Now, I think there was a whole lot going into this time, and it's very challenging trying to connect the dots between Contact Report 70 and the what they call the OM or the OM. But anyway, let me read this. But it happened that the human beings of earth were of a different type than the sons and the daughters of the heavens. Therefore, they gave birth to offspring who were different than they. And they gave birth to offspring who grew up fast and were taller than the mankind of earth, and also taller than the sons and the daughters of the heavens. For the offspring grew up to giants who measured in height 33 feet, which is 30 ells. I don't know what an ell is. But of the descendants were many. And after a few generations, they grew to a large nation. And the new nation increased and also was wild and unruly like mankind of earth, from whom they all descended. And as the new nation was great in number of people, now we're talking about the giants, a nation of giants. These giants were the offspring of the native earth humans and the Plyaran. For the offspring grew up to be giants who measured 33 feet, like we said. And the nation grew great in number. This is the giants. They were also big eaters. They consumed all the provisions of mankind of earth, and soon a nationwide starvation ensued. But the starvation became greater, so the human beings soon were not able to nourish the giants anymore. Then the giants turned against mankind of earth, and also against the sons and daughters of the heavens, whom they had descended. And the giants declared war against the mankind of earth, and the daughters and the sons of heavens, and took them prisoner, butchered them, and devoured them. So the offspring of the Pleiaren and the Earthmen eventually started to eat the people of Earth. But many human beings of Earth, and also the sons and daughters of the heavens, fled and were seen no more and not pursued by the giants any longer, who steadily grew in malice and increased in savagery. And when the giants could not find the human beings of Earth and the sons and daughters of the heavens anymore, they began to disgrace all animals which moved. They slept with animals, the birds, the land animals, and the fish of the waters also. But they also killed them and devoured them among themselves. So they had nourishment of the flesh, and they drank the blood. So thereby the evil was created on earth, the unrighteousness and the war, lying in bloodshed, and all other evil which exists among the human beings of earth. But the giants lived a long time on earth before they fell into infertility and died out. So the giants just died off. Creation took away the problem, so to speak. They just fell into infertility. Mankind of earth had escaped into distant lands, with which then the sons and daughters of heavens. An amazing story, and this is filling in the dots in Contact 70, which just tells us about, you know, Samyasa and his mating with an earth woman and Adam coming about. So anyway, I wonder if somehow the existence of all these giants played a role in this incredible war that took place between Atlantis and Lemuria. I wonder if the crimes of these extraterrestrials. And think about that. The crimes of these extraterrestrials. We're kind of the Earth human is the result of this union between the Pleiaren and the Earth human, which was really completely against the rules. Kind of makes you appreciate why we have so many problems on this Earth. It's pretty phenomenal. So these two great cities appear, Atlantis, Lemuria, and eventually Eris stirs up trouble, and the Atlanteans strike first. They have these very powerful ships with these beam weapons, and they melt Lemuria to the ground. And the people of Lemuria, some of them escape, not many, and they go to the asteroid belt. And they pick out an asteroid and attach a drive system to it, and they send it back to the Earth. And it makes this horrific sound as it comes into our atmosphere. And eventually, this great meteor kind of explodes, and the Earth is pelted with these meteors. But there are two major pieces which splash into the Atlantic Ocean and create this tremendous tsunami, this incredible wall of water, and these giant pieces eventually slam into the floor of the Atlantic Ocean and start this great earthquake. And there's volcanoes that go off. And eventually Atlantis sinks into the ocean, and there's this tremendous pole shift which occurs, and eventually there's this catastrophe, this whole successive series of catastrophes that take place, and the whole Atlantis and Lemuria are completely wiped out. The ecosystem of the Earth is trashed. And it takes, well, there's a large gap historically with little information. Perhaps 100,000 years goes by as the Earth recovers from this great war and this pole shift which takes place. Now, eventually, Eris the 11th comes back to the Earth. And I guess he's a descendant of the original Eris. And he kind of sets up a government on Earth. And he's a tyrant. He's a bit of a tyrant. And he has a son named Jehovan. Jehovan eventually murders Eris the 11th. And Jehovan ruled the Earth and let himself be called creator. And he had a son, Jehave. And Jehave lived 340 years into his father's reign, and then he murdered his father, Jehovan. And Jehave was megalomaniacal, just like his father, and he let himself be proclaimed as the creator. And he had a son, Erisame. Now, Erisame was forced off the earth at one time, but eventually he came back. And Erisame and his father followers, well, Erisame murdered his father. Erisame was the fella that originally set up the Giza intelligences here on the earth. Now, the Giza intelligences were headquartered underneath the Giza Plateau, where the Great Pyramid is, and they set up this structure which basically manipulated the Earth people through religions and other mechanisms. Hen took over for Erisame. Hen was called Jehovah, according to Meyer material. In 2080, Hen was forced out by his nephew, Comegal the First. And Comegal took over leadership of the Giza intelligences. Now, if you remember, eventually Comegal the Second took over from Comegal the First. Now, Comegal the Second was in power all the way to like December of 1976. And these Giza intelligences influenced Hitler, and they influenced the Thule Society, the Vril Society, those kind of occult societies that were in Germany at that time. But the Giza intelligences, according to Meyer material, have been eradicated at this point, and I think that what we're seeing now with the elite are basically the elite just running on through their own supervision. So at least supposedly we're free now, freed up from the Giza intelligences. So anyway, I thought I would just do a quick review of Atlantis and Lemuria and then just merge in that incredible story of the giants and the chaos that they called. And I've found that information to be incredibly fascinating over time. And maybe we're going to just buckle down and stick a little tighter to the contact notes in future shows. I've been trying to do that. It's real easy for me to get off on tangents, kind of my nature a little bit. Folks, I want to appreciate all of you that came to the chat room tonight. At one time, we certainly had a real busy chat room there. And if you get a chance, visit EXOPOLITICS ohio.us, exopoliticsohio.us, and I'm posting MP3s up there all the time from both Revolution Radio and Blog Talk Radio. There's a lot for you to listen to. I appreciate all of you coming tonight. Hope you have a good week, and we'll be back next weekend for more information from the Billy Meier case. Have a good evening, folks.